From afar, they saw that much of the Arcturus's damaged rigging had been replaced or repaired, but as they sailed closer, it became clear that she still lay impaled upon the granite horns of the Deceiver, like a sacrifice on the altar of Mammon. Closer still, they saw a small, forlorn group standing at the foot of the mainmast on the heavily canted deck. Through the lens of the telescope, Dorian picked out the burly figure and bright features of Ruby Cornish. It was obvious that the Arcturus offered no threat. She was immobilized, and the heavy list in her deck rendered her batteries useless. The cannons along her port side pointed into the water, and the starboard side at the sky. However, Dorian took no chances. He ordered both the Revenge and the Sprite cleared for action, and the guns ran out. They closed in and hove to on each side of the Arcturus, covering her with their broadsides. As soon as he was within hail, Dorian called across to Cornish. "Will you yield your ship, sir?" Ruby Cornish was astonished to be addressed by the rebel caliph in perfect English, toned with the sweet accents of Devon. He recovered swiftly, removed his hat, and stepped to the rail, balancing there against the listing deck. "You leave me no choice, Your Majesty. Do you wish to take my sword as well?" "No, Captain. You fought bravely and acquitted yourself with honour. Please keep it." Dorian was hoping for Cornish's cooperation. "You are gracious, Your Majesty." Cornish was mollified by these compliments. He clapped his hat back on his head and tightened his sword belt. "I await your instructions." "Where is Sir Guy Courtney? Is he below decks?" "9 days ago, Sir Guy took the ship's boats and a party of my best men. He set off for Muscat, where he purposes to find assistance. He will return as speedily as is possible to salvage the Arcturus. In the meantime, he left me to guard the vessel and protect her cargo." This was a long message to shout, and Cornish's face was as bright as a jewel by the time he had finished. "I am sending a boarding party to you. I intend to salvage your vessel and float her off the reef. Will you cooperate with my officers?" Cornish fidgeted for a moment, then seemed to make up his mind. "Majesty, I have yielded to you. I will follow your orders." They laid the Sprite and the Revenge alongside each side of the Arcturus, and unloaded her, divesting her of her cannon, shot, and water. Then they ran the heaviest anchor cables under her hull as slings. They tightened these with the windlasses on the Revenge and the Sprite until they were rigid as bars of iron. The Arcturus lifted slowly, and they heard the timbers popping and crackling as the granite horns eased their grip in her vitals. The tides were only 2 days from high springs, and in these waters the tidal variation was almost 3 fathoms. Before making the final effort, Dorian waited until slack water was at the bottom of the ebb. Then he sent every able-bodied man to his place at the pumps. At his signal they threw themselves on the long handles. The bilge water flew in sheets over the sides, faster than the inflow through the rents in the Arcturus's hull. As she lightened, she strained to tear herself free of the rock. The rising tide added its irresistible impulse to the buoyancy of the hull, and with a last terrible rending sound from below, the Arcturus slowly righted and floated free. Immediately, all 3 vessels set their mainsails, and still lashed together, glided out of the Deceiver's clutches. With 50 fathoms of water under their hulls, Dorian brought the linked vessels slowly around on a course for Sordar Island. Then he placed an armed guard over the hatches of the Arcturus's main hold, with strict orders that no man be allowed to pass. The steering was clumsy and erratic, and the 3 ships staggered along like drinking companions returning homeward from a night of revelry. As the dawn broke, they had raised the black massif of Sorda over the horizon, and before noon they had dropped anchor in the bay. The first task was to draw a heavy canvas sail under the Arcturus's hull and cover the terrible tears through her bottom timbers. Only then could the pumps of all 3 ships dry her out. Before they warped her into the beach to careen her and complete the repairs, Dorian, Mansur, and Verity went aboard her. Verity went directly to her own cabin. She was appalled by the damage that the battle had wrought. Her clothing was in disarray, torn by wood splinters, stained by seawater. Perfume bottles had shattered, powder pots cracked, and the contents had spilled over her petticoats and stockings. However, all of this could be replaced. It was her books and manuscripts that were her prime concern. Chief of these was a set of rare, beautifully illustrated and centuries-old volumes of the Ramayana. This had been a personal gift from Muhammad Shah, the great mogul, in recognition of her services as interpreter during his negotiations with Sagai. She had already translated the first 5 volumes of this mighty Hindu epic into English. Among her other treasures was a copy of the Quran. This had been given to her by Sultan Obaid when she and her father had last visited him in the Topkapi Saray Palace in Constantinople. The gift had been made on condition that she translated into English. This was reputed to be one of the original copies of the authoritative text revisions commissioned by the Caliph Uthman in AD 644 to 656, 12 years after the death of Muhammad, and it was known as the Uthmanic Recension. True to her promise to the Sultan, Verity had almost completed the translation of the seminal work. Her manuscripts were an investment of 2 years' painstaking labour. With her heart in her mouth, she dragged out the chest in which she kept them from under a pile of fallen timbers and other debris. She exclaimed with relief when she opened the lid and found them undamaged. Trees?